following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Monday. Brand new week, everyone. And sure enough, we've been riddled with technical problems all day today. Not just me, but the Progressive Voices Network. We are back up on Progressive Voices, so that's a good thing. sound seems to be okay. Right. I'm just worried that on my the interface that I use to send out the video to YouTube and the video stream, period, says, error, YouTube is not receiving enough video to maintain smooth streaming. What? As such, viewers will experience buffering. Well, lovely. Because nothing is different here, just so you know. But that said, I am so over AT&T. So tomorrow morning, the local company who provides internet services where I live, because there's a monopoly on it. I live in the town of Coral Springs, and they have a deal with a company called Blue Stream Cable that they're the only ones who can provide cable TV service and with it, internet. We currently have, so there's AT&T or Blue Stream. Those are your only choices here. So Blue Stream, I was with for a while, some years ago, and they were horrible. It kept going out, and it was sort of the lesser of two evils. AT&T also sucks, but at least the signal, the internet stayed up. But now, Blue Stream has put in fiber optics, and here's a little thing. Last year, allegedly, AT&T was doing it, but they started digging in my neighborhood, and I live in a nice neighborhood, and they broke a water main, and they screwed up. I think they did a lot of damage to some very nice homes, and they stopped, and that was it. Never heard another word about AT&T putting fiber in our neighborhood again. Yeah, you see, Diane says I'm getting a lousy feed. Feed keeps cutting out. Damn it. And there's no reason for this other than our shitty internet. So tomorrow, we should have the new internet service up and running. I will keep this as a, damn it. And there's nothing I can do about it. So, yeah, sorry. The audio stream, in case, you're wondering, can be heard at NicoleSandlerStream.com. That's the easiest way. You can listen on the Progressive Voices Network at ProgressiveVoices.com. You can listen on my TuneIn channel. There is a TuneIn channel. All these streams are available, by the way, at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. So I apologize for the buffering today. Again, I blame AT&T, and that should all be fixed tomorrow. Fingers crossed. Knocking on wood laminate. There's so much to talk about today. And Tom Hartman's going to be here. Tom Hartman, go figure, has a new book out. That's a change for him. Anyway, Tom Hartman will be here at the bottom of the hour. And I do want to bring you up to date on things happening in Ukraine and with Tatiana and all that. But I want to start here in Florida. So the Florida State Legislature meets once a year, and it's about a 60-day session, I think, and it wraps up today. It wraps up, it ends with the passage of a $112 million budget, I guess. I don't even know. A $112 billion budget. Yeah, they're more expensive than I thought. But what I want to focus in on, and it's just a sampling of some of the bills that the Florida State Legislature gave us this year. You ready? I have a drum roll and everything. Okay, so let's go with, here's Florida legislation for you. HB 1467, these are all bills that passed the Florida State legislative session, and Governor Death Sentence has either already signed them or is in the process of. We'll be signing them soon. So there's HB 1467, which expands the ability. This is, I can't even believe I'm reading these words. Expands the ability for school districts to ban books. And it gets better. You think ban books is enough, but no, it gets better. Allowing a member of a district without a student in the district to object to a book. So in other words, some old fart in my neighborhood, I could be a mom with kids in the local schools, some, you know, retiree down the street who doesn't have any kids could object to one of the books and have standing, right? And it allows the state to compile a comprehensive list of books that are banned. Parents also may not read to a class unless the book is pre-approved by the school's media specialist. Yay, Florida. Then there's this, because, you know, hiring of university presidents and stuff should be secretive, right? Right? The hiring of state university and state college presidents would become more secret under a bill passed by legislators after lawmakers defeated similar attempts over the last 7 years. The measure exempts and makes confidential personal identifying information of an applicant for president of a state university or college during the early stages of the selection process. You know, there is something called the Sunshine Law here in the Sunshine State that says all official business must be done out in the sunshine. I guess, except hiring university presidents. This one is one of my favorites. It's HB 1571, and yes, I'm being sarcastic. HB 1571 curbs picketing and protests outside people's homes, including the governor's mansion. Go figure. Why would there be a need for that? And homes of university presidents. Well, I guess if we can't know who they are, we wouldn't know where to picket, right? Opponents fear the measure will be another opportunity for discretionary enforcement, you think? And used to arrest and criminalize people of color who are exercising their First Amendment rights. That sounds about right to me, right? Yep. All right. The next one. Here's another one for you. HB 873 exempts from public records, the drugs used for the lethal injections in capital punishment. Drug manufacturers prohibit the use of their life-saving drugs for executions, and critics say this will shield purveyors on the black market. So they can kill you, and they don't have to tell you what they're going to kill you with. Florida, yeah. I'm going to keep going. HB 595. The legislature also wants to add one program to the education curriculum. It's 395. Bad eyesight. HB 395 requires the governor to, this is just great, requires the governor to annually issue a proclamation designating November 7th as Victims of Communism Day. Beginning in the 23-24 school year, high school students enrolled in the U.S. government course must spend at least 45 minutes of instruction on, quote, Victims of Communism Day to discuss communist dictators and how the victims of communists suffered, how the victims of communism suffered under the regimes. Okay. Okay, Beckola is asking where we can listen besides YouTube. Hold on. NicoleSandlerStream.com is easiest. There you go. I know, we're buffering. I'm so sorry. There's more. HB 1557, you've heard about this one before, is titled the Parental Rights in Education Bill by the Republicans and called the Don't Say Gay Bill by the rest of us. It allows a parent to sue a school district if the parent believes that a teacher has addressed a subject that is not an, quote, age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate way. So if you disagree with the way your the kid's teacher is teaching about biology, you can sue because, you know, that's what it's all about. I just can't. It could effectively disenfranchise, the opponents say it could effectively disenfranchise the entire LGBTQ community. You think? All right, I got two more for you. Then we'll move on. HB7 prohibits instruction that compels students to believe that they bear personal responsibility for historic wrongs because of their race, color, sex, or national origin. Well, nobody's going to compel kids to believe, to feel bad that they're white because whites own slaves. It's all the way. Yeah. Okay. That's enough of that. That's enough of that. Hey, you know what? You know what happened today? Of course, I didn't cue it up and get it ready for you, but I'm going to play it for you anyway, if I can find where I put it. There it is. Randy Rainbow has a new video out, and it figures I'm going to play it the day my video stream is screwing up on me. But I will also post it on the blog at NicoleSandler.com/3-14-22. That's today's date. So if you didn't see it, you will. Hold on one second. All right. So, if you didn't see it here, you can see it there. I hope that makes sense. And I hope this works because I don't have much confidence in myself today. But all right. It's been a while. Randy Rainbow, take it away.
I know.
Oh.
Whatever.
Half of the screen's missing.
Welcome back. We are joined now by the most hated woman in Washington. The reason it's a bad idea to drink battery acid, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie, thank you so much for being with us during this difficult time. I understand they just suspended your OnlyFans account.
Well, yes, sir. I think it's very concerning. As a matter of fact, I think it's terrifying. I see it as an attack, really.
Yeah, who gives a shit? You've had a busy few weeks speaking at white nationalist conventions, heckling the president's State of the Union. Tell us, how do you balance your day job as a bigoted, fame-hungry conspiracy theorist with your personal life as a bigoted, hypocritical Ooh. Seditionist and overall threat to civilization and a mom?
It's basically impossible because when you become a public figure, as you know, I'm sure, you lose a lot of rights.
Tell me about it. I slapped a barista at Starbucks the other day because he gave me oat milk when I asked for almond. And then they wouldn't even give me my rewards points on the order.
Well, we have to stand up against the lies, and thank you for pointing that out. It's been unbelievable to me.
The CDC has just announced that it's tracking a viral trend of wacky twits. And there's a new strain of mutations at large. Some go by Lauren and others by Marge. Uh-huh. They somehow spread to Washington, D.C.
All through the GOP.
I don't know who's running the federal government these days. Joe Biden or Prince John.
What's with this dame?
She thinks democracy's a game.
And she's the same.
So we refer to them both by one name.
What? Girl, you're a Karen. You're an obnoxious, intolerant pain.
Hun,
you're a Karen. And you appear to be missing a brain.
Fucking stupid.
You lie and call scientists Nazis. While actual Nazis you bless. Cause you're a Karen.
And girl, you're a mess.
Here she is, folks, the leader of the hacks.
Who's she backing up now, Genghis Khan?
She's the nutjob who's pro-January 6th and anti-vax. Gets all her information from Fox News and QAnon.
Oh, wow. Gosh, that's quite a list. Well...
shut up. Get a clue. Go to hell.
Girl, you're a Karen. Get off on the fits that you pitch.
She loves it.
Cause you're a Karen. You're just a racist ass basic white.
Woo! Don't make me say it, bitch.
You act all entitled and macho. You advocate hate and condemn gazpacho.
Gazpacho, please.
And though you claim you're America first,
we're first.
You're stuck in an anti-American stupor. Your privilege is whiter than Anderson Cooper.
Hey, Daddy.
Cause you're a Karen.
And you're the worst.
Prince John,
Oh, in politics you don't belong, sis. Yet somehow you're done.
wound up in Congress.
You just complain and harass and suppress.
It's your
Randy Rainbow.
It's John from...
who gives a shit?
Oh, I so apologize for the video stream today. It's still funny, even if all you did was hear the audio. We are having video streaming problems today. And so listen, if you want just the audio stream uninterrupted, you can get it from Progressive Voices at progressivevoices.com. You can get it all the links on my Listen Live page. That's at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. Or if you just want the no-frills link to just the audio stream and nothing else, NicoleSandlerStream.com. And it'll just, you click play and it'll play for you, hopefully. And they're coming first thing in the morning to install the new alleged fiber internet service tomorrow. So hopefully this will be the last time this happens, and I apologize. So it was a weekend. I hope you enjoyed yours. I certainly needed one. You know, I know you guys are as curious as I am about how things are going in Ukraine. Again, I keep up with the news, but I'm more concerned with my person over there. For me, thinking about a country of 44 million people being exterminated by a madman with nuclear weapons is, it's too much. My little brain can't handle it all. For me, it's easier to think about a small group of people. And so I've met, I met Tatiana, who with her husband owns a hostel, an expensive hotel in the middle of Kyiv. And we met when I called her a couple of days after Putin invaded, and we struck up a conversation. She had to go because they had to get back underground, back to the basement, I'm guessing, because of bombs falling on their city. It's a lovely thing. And so anyway, we've been now communicating over the Telegram app. It's an encrypted app that... that I think more people in Europe use than here, but it's catching on. So anyway, this weekend, you know, I really didn't hear much from her on Saturday. And I think that's because they were moving. So they did move to a new apartment. They are now they're still in the Ternopil region. If you are following along on a map, the Ternopil region of Ukraine, which is much closer to the borders of, say, Poland and Hungary than Kiev, but they're still pretty far away. But they were staying in this remote village where Tatiana said it at least was quiet. Now they had to, and then we heard last week over the weekend that they attacked there, right? So they now moved. They're in the city of Chorktiv, Chortkiv, in the Ternopil region. And a few things that she told me. Yesterday, she sent me a couple of pictures. She and her husband, a friend of hers, and her 5-year-old son, who I believe is Tatiana's godson. And, you know, they're just trying to make the best of it. And she said, now in this city, we often hear sirens. So we prepared all the documents, warm clothes, blankets, and water near the exit if we have to run. Can you imagine living like this? She continues, during the siren with a child and at night, it's difficult to go down to the basement. So we sit behind the second wall from the street on the floor. Now that scares me because if a bomb drops on that building, being behind the second wall might save them in a hurricane, but not from a bomb. So that's frightening. She said, in the afternoon, we went for a walk with the child and immediately the siren began to sound. It's difficult for him to explain why we do not go to the swing. What do you tell a five-year-old, right? And then she says, learning to live by the new rules, but it's not easy. Discuss where to put warm clothes and socks with shoes. If the wall collapses from a rocket, and what is the most important thing to have at hand if we lose everything at once? These are difficult topics, but we discuss them constantly. We discuss with my husband what we will do if one of us dies, where to go if something goes wrong. We will only get stronger. And I read that and I just said, oh, my heart breaks for you every day. Thank you for these updates that I also share with my listeners. They are very concerned about your safety. And she responded with, you know, prayer emojis and a sad face. And then, you know, we keep talking about her coming on for coming on to talk with us live. And she's not there yet, but she says soon, one of these days we will call. I'm just, you know, I'm letting her call the shots. I'm saying whenever you're ready. I know the listeners would love to hear from you. And, you know, I'd certainly love to talk with you again because we've just been communicating like this. And then, so this morning when I awoke, I again wrote to her. I said, how are things where you are today? Still getting lots of air raid sirens. And she said, yes, the night was restless, but today is a very quiet day. And this, I want to read to you because it may make you feel a little better. She had a good day today. She said, we went to the city for groceries. In Kyiv, on the way, I broke the screen to my phone, came up to ask how much the sticker on the phone costs. A kind woman saw that I was arriving and pasted it on for me for free. I cried. I don't know what kind of sticker they have over there that will fix a broken glass on a phone, but we need that here, right? Then she continued. She said, later we went to the Catholic Church and a nice woman came up to us. She asked in what language to address us. Do we understand the Ukrainian language? We answered, we understand well and we talk. And the woman offered to write our desires on a piece of paper and attach it to a special wall. And at 1 p.m, there will be a service and our wishes will be read. She said it was so soulful. Then we went to the market to buy food, and the man just gave us 2 kilograms of apples. People are so kind and helpful. I was impressed all day. And although, you know, I think impressed might not be the word she was looking for, obviously, English is not her first language. I got the feeling that she had a good day. And then I was able to tell her the news. I wrote, I'm so happy to hear this. We just learned that President Zelensky will address the U.S. Congress Wednesday morning. That's good to hear. And she said, it's great. And then she sent me a picture. Yeah, I've been sharing my artwork with her. And she sent me a picture that she made. Here, I'll put it up on the screen so you can kind of see it. Those of you who are watching on the broken video, you'll be able to see this anyway. There it is, a beautiful little picture, a colorful drawing. And she said something about, she said that, yes, I drew it. Usually I have little time for it, but for me, it's a great pleasure. And then I sent her this painting, this stained glass. You know, I do this faux stained glass thing. And I said, you know, it's sunflowers for Ukraine. So I said, I did that this weekend. And I hope that to be able to send it to her soon, that I'm going to hold on to it for her. And when she returns home, I will send it to her. And she said, the picture is the embodiment of our lands, sunflowers and blue skies. So, you know, that's nice. Oh, shit. She just sent me another video just moments ago since I came on the air. Oh, wow. I'm gonna pull this up. I don't know if there's, I think there is audio. She said, I told you that friends remained in our house in Kyiv. They sent this. And there's a video and all I can see are like lights flashing. Hold on. There we go. Oh shit, it's rockets. This is what's happening now. She sent this 10 minutes ago, not even 10 minutes ago. This is what's going on in Kyiv. They're just hearing shelling going on, I guess. Oh my God. That's just, it's beyond devastating. Wow. So that's what's going on right now in Kyiv, shelling, so that the people that are staying in her Friends Forever hostel shot that video. And it's just blurry. You could see the bottom lights on, I guess, a building across the street. But more than that, you can hear the bombs. Sunflowers and blue skies. And she, tomorrow we are making documents for the child and we will leave for Poland. She just wrote, yes, I'm so glad to hear that. You need to get to safety. Sorry, I'm doing this in real time. Usually right now, see, it's about, and there they are. Here's a picture of them. Hold on. I'm going to show you. This is their picture. So that must be Tatiana, I think, on the right. There's her friend with the little boy lying down next to her, and that must be Tatiana's husband. Oh, my God. I'm so glad they're leaving. I hope they get out okay. This is just, it's just devastating. I'm grateful that she's keeping us posted, but, oh, my God. But now her husband cannot go. Her husband will not be let out of the country, but Tatiana and her friend and the five-year-old little boy are going to go to Poland. I'm glad. I'm really glad to hear that. Maybe her friend's husband is there as well, because I see another male face at the very top of the photo. Can you see this? Just at the very top over here. You can't see what I'm pointing at. But there's a male face looking down into the picture. I guess he's the one who took the photograph. Oh, man. This is just, it's horrifying. As is war. That's war, right? It's terrifying and horrifying. By the way, a U.S.-based journalist was killed there. And today we heard over the weekend, it's in What's News, which I'll play at the end of the show. But now we learned that in addition to the journalist who was killed over the weekend, today Benjamin Hall of Fox, not News, was also injured while covering the scene just outside of Kyiv. He's now in the hospital. And Fox, chairman, whoever runs the network, put out a statement saying that, you know, he's in the hospital, we don't know much more. But what I then read is that they were embedded with the Russians, Fox embedded with the Russians. I got nothing to say about that. Jster K Wise Guy said cannot watch anymore. Sorry. Come over and just listen to an audio stream. I know the audio, the video is all foobar today. You can listen to the audio at NicoleSandlerStream.com or progressivevoices.com. Oh, okay. So she said, she's writing again. She said, today we spent the whole evening in the corridor because the sirens did not stop. Our husbands stay here. We understand they are freer without us, and we are like a burden to them. Oh, my God, Tatiana. I'm on the air right now reading this to the listeners as I read it myself and type. We're glad you're leaving! Exclamation point. And, you know, I don't pray, but, you know, I don't need to get into that with her. And we will keep your husbands in our thoughts and prayers. And, you know, I hate that saying, but, you know, I'm trying to communicate across language barrier and across the country. All right. I see Tom Hartman has joined us in the chat room. So let me get him in here. And let me get his picture up and everything, and I'll fill him in on what's happening with Tatiana in case that ding goes off again, so I can fill you in on what's happening. I'm happy to welcome back to the show Tom Hartman. Hey, Tom. Good to see you again.
Hey, Nicole.
Hi.
Great to see you too.
You too. So while we're talking, you know, I know a listener told me that he emailed you about this, but I don't know how much you know or not. I have made contact with a woman and her family in Ukraine. Her name is Tatiana. She and her husband own a hostel in the middle of Kyiv. And I found it because the name of it, it's called Friends Forever, written in English. And I looked it up online and the sign was in English. And I thought, okay, this is a sign. I should reach out to this person. And we spoke and we've stayed in touch. She left Kyiv last week. They went to a remote village where they stayed for about a week. And then the bombs started falling there. They now moved to a city. They're about 200 kilometers away from the border with Poland. She's been hesitant to leave because her husband can't go with her. Anyway, just moments ago, I communicate with her on Telegram, the Telegram app, and she just wrote to me that she said she sent me a video that she had friends who remained in the hostel in Kyiv sent her, and it's nonstop shelling of the city. You hear the video. And it's just horrible. Here, wait, I'll play the audio for you. This is in Kyiv right now. She sent this 10 minutes ago. It's just horrible. So she even from the city, she said, tomorrow we're making documents for the child and we will leave for Poland. They're going to leave the husbands there and they're going to go, which I'm very happy about because it's what's going on over there is just devastating.
Yeah, it is. It truly is.
And what I said to the listeners, I mean, when I think about 40 million plus people that are under this kind of attack, that's too much for me to wrap my head around. But one person and her family, I can focus on them. And so we've been talking every day. And this woman is so brave. They have people staying at the hostel in Kyiv, some people who couldn't leave and didn't have documents. But yeah, I'm glad they're getting to safety. Anyway, I'm sort of preoccupied with that. This is,
yeah, I get it.
Who would ever think that in 2022 we'd be looking at this kind of a war? Vladimir Putin, I don't know. I think he's probably a little crazier than Donald Trump.
I'm not sure, but he certainly is autocratic. You know, he and Trump share that autocratic tendency.
They do. And, you know, the disturbing, one of the disturbing things about it are the propaganda that's cutting through. I had somebody come onto my YouTube over the weekend to, you know, to push out Russian propaganda. It's amazing that they're able to cut through so much over here. And it's hard to get the message through to Russia that this is really happening. Tatiana's father lives in Russia. They're estranged. But he doesn't believe her when she tells him that these bombs are falling all over their country.
Yep. They've got a very efficient propaganda operation within Russia.
That they do.
Startling.
Oh, so Tom Hartmann is here. The occasion being the release of yet another book in his Hidden History series. This is The Hidden History of Big Brother in America. And God, what I said after I, you know, went through the book a little bit is, it's worse than we know. It's worse than we realize. Because when you think about Big Brother, you think 1984 and you think, you know, the government. Well, yeah, there's still government surveillance, but it seems like a lot of the book is dedicated to actually corporate Big Brother and the things corporate Big Brother is doing and that they know about us and are kind of shocking. Did you ever watch the Netflix TV show Black Mirror?
No.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, they have like 5 or 6 seasons. I only caught a couple of episodes, and one of them was an episode called Nosedive, and it is this scenario. It is in China, but this was in 2016, and now it's come true. They have something called social credit scores that you can explain it better than I can. This is already happening in China, and this is what was foretold in this episode of Black Mirror. Season 3, episode 1, for anybody who wants to check it out. When I saw it, it freaked me out, and I thought, thank God, that could never happen. And now here we are. This is real. Tell us how this works. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's not gone entirely nationwide in China, but there's this social credit program, and it will determine how quickly your doctor will see you, how quickly you get checked into a hospital, whether you can get a good job, whether your kids can get into a decent school, whether you can travel. I mean, just in 2019, they denied millions of people the ability to fly on an airplane or travel on a high-speed train because their social credit scores weren't high enough. The way that your social credit score deteriorates is from, you know, antisocial behavior like loud music on a train, or, fighting in public, or not showing up for a restaurant or hotel reservation that you'd made, being late for a meeting with government officials. And the way that you boost your social credit score is by praising the government on social media and doing good volunteer stuff like giving blood and, you know, cleaning the streets. And it can take years to recover your social media score if it's in the tank. Even dating services, which are very popular in China right now, won't take people with certain low social media scores. So that's where we don't want to end up.
No, please. Oh my, you really have to watch that episode of Black Mirror because it will freak you out because they predicted this.
We're halfway there with at least economically. I mean, you know, you've got companies that claim to have 15,000-20,000 data points on each one of us that are advising landlords and employers and even retail stores. I mean, you call into a retail store that is advertising that they'll beat anybody's price. And there are companies that sell them a service of as soon as you call in, their phone, their caller ID recognizes you, checks your database, looks at your browsing history from today, and can tell the store if you have recently been looking at the websites of their competitors. And if so, then you're probably calling to say that you want the lower price. And so you get on hold for 2 hours. I mean, it's like nuts. It's like, you know, if you've ever called an airline or a phone company or a utility or anybody and sat on hold for a long, long time, odds are you're one of these companies has flagged you as not being, as either being undesirable or as not being a desirable customer.
Wow. See,
most people are completely unaware of it. They think everybody has to wait on hold for an hour when they call, you know, the airlines. No, not true.
I didn't realize there were different, classes of on hold callers. Oh, yeah. Depending on your browsing history that day,
And there's a drugstore chain in the United States that hooked one of these back end data systems up to a facial recognition system. So the minute you walk, and they did this for several years, they stopped it 2 years ago when they got outed and it became a kind of a kerfuffle. But the moment you walked into the store, their employees knew who you were, knew what your history was with that store, knew what your history was in general, mm-hmm. knew whether you were the kind of person that they should be following around the store or the kind of person that they should be offering to give lavish help to, or the person they should ignore or whatever. I mean, it's remarkable.
It is remarkable. And again, I didn't realize it. So I'm guessing most people don't realize that it had gotten to that point. We knew it was there. We knew the capabilities existed. But, you know, I think the sensible part of my brain says they're not interested in me. But yeah, they are. And it's that easy to get the information for them. It's at their fingertips. So I guess, you know, we're talking Big Brother. The book is The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threaten Us and Our Democracy. And I think a lot of us, when you think about Big Brother and surveillance and all that, automatically go to the Patriot Act. But the stuff you're talking about now wasn't even a figment of anyone's imagination back in when the Patriot Act was written. Or maybe it was a figment of their imagination, but it wasn't near to reality. Right.
Well, yeah, the Patriot Act, you know, along with other legislation, it's not the only piece of federal legislation that was passed that vastly empowered increased the power, the surveillance powers of our government. But it was one of the more consequential ones. Those laws kind of set up a situation where government could have access to enormous amounts of data. But the main tool that they use, and we learned this from Ed Snowden's revelations, is not the government spying on us. It's the government hiring private companies to spy on us, because the government is subject to freedom of information, oversight, public releases. They're subject to congressional oversight. They're subject to all kinds of rules and regulations. Acme Intelligence Services Incorporated is not. Right. And in fact, Ed Snowden, everybody said NSA, contractor Ed Snowden, Edward Snowden didn't work for the NSA. He worked for a private company.
Right.
And as a private company, they can keep things secret that the government can't keep secret. They can snoop in ways that the government can't snoop. But they can, at the end of the day, after they've gathered all this information, simply sell it to the government.
That's incredible. It's just
half of our intelligence services and a little over half of our non-infrastructure military budget now goes to individual private for-profit corporate contractors.
Well, that's not surprising to me, because that's the way we've been headed. I get that.
Yeah, neoliberalism on steroids.
Yeah, right. So, Tom, but the thing that doesn't make any sense, if our intelligence in this sense is that good, how do things fall through the cracks? I mean, I want to say, if they can spy on us to that level of accuracy, why don't they know everything? Why don't they know, where Vladimir Putin is right now, so they can take him out?
First of all, they're not, they may. I don't want to speculate on what we're doing in Russia.
Right.
But in terms of in the United States, odds are they do. They do know everything about you. And if they want to know everything about you, all they have to do is pay a few bucks to one of these big data brokers, and they would be glad to sell them everything about you. So, it's just that they're not using it right now. They haven't, we haven't. For example, Donald Trump said that if he was reelected president, he was going to go after the media. He was going to go after the press. He was going to change the laws that protect and the constitutional interpretations in the Supreme Court that protect the press. Well, had he done that, you and I might be in jail right now. I mean, that would be the point at which they would reach into the basket and say, oh, well, look at what Nicole did back 6 years ago, or look at what Tom did, or that we would be set up, for some sort of crime, in quotes, that, would end us up in jail.
Part of the title of the book is Privacy, The Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance. Privacy is a big deal. I mean, the Fourth Amendment's about privacy, but they don't use the word, do they?
No, and there's a reason for that. In the 1770s, the word privacy had a completely different meaning from what it does today. I did a document search. All of the founders' writings are now digitized. The only in from Jefferson, Madison, Franklin, Hamilton, Gouverneur Morris. I mean, pretty much everybody whose writings are available. I did an extensive search of those documents. And the only reference to privacy I could find was in Federalist Number 69, where Alexander Hamilton was complaining about how corrupt New York State was because their governor was selected in privacy by three cronies. And privacy back then meant something skeezy, something kind of dirty, something that was unsavory. And in fact, this was before we had bathrooms. The bathtub actually didn't move into the same room with the toilet until hot water plumbing became widespread in the United States, which was the early 20th century.
Wow.
Now, prior to that, the tub was typically near the stove because you'd heat the water on the stove for the tub. And we didn't have indoor toilets by and large until we started getting indoor plumbing in the mid to late 1800s. And so in the 1700s, when this Constitution was being written, if you wanted to leave a room, if you wanted to, say you were having a dinner party or something and you wanted to excuse yourself to use the bathroom, what we would call the bathroom, you would say, excuse me, I need a moment of privacy. And everybody understood privacy was the word that meant I need to use a toilet. And that's why to this day we refer to outhouses as privies. So the word privacy had a completely different meaning in the 1700s, and that's why it doesn't appear in the Constitution. The concepts, because of the founders, who's going to write toilet functions into the Bill of Rights, right? But the founders understood these concepts. And that's why in the First Amendment, you have the right to speak and you have the right to meet, to assemble in public, but you also have the right not to speak in the assembly and the right to basically conspire to assemble in public. In the Third Amendment, you have the right not to have your home invaded by soldiers who are being, you know, quartered in your home. In the Fourth Amendment, you have the right of security was the word they used then. We would call it privacy today, in your person, your effects, your home, and your papers. And in the Fifth Amendment, you have the right not to incriminate yourself. Again, a privacy right, not to reveal things that you have said or done. And then arguably in the Ninth Amendment, you know, where it says any rights not claimed by the government revert to the people. You could assume that there's a right to privacy there. And in fact, they did in the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. But the word privacy didn't come before the United States Supreme Court until 1961.
Wow.
I mean, you know, all those years, there were some cases in the 20s and 30s that revolved around it. And in every case, the court ruled against a right to privacy, producing some of the most spectacular, rebuttals, the dissents in American Supreme Court history. But in 61, there was a law. 61 was the year birth control pills were legalized by the FDA. Mm-hmm. And there was a law on the books in Connecticut. There were similar laws in a lot of other states that had large Catholic populations that made it a crime, an actual crime, to possess birth control devices in your home, period, including condoms. I mean, back then it was condoms and diaphragms, and they were just starting to get into the hormone-based pills. And so in 61, there was a lawsuit to try and knock that down. And the Supreme Court said, no, it's fine with us. If Connecticut wants to make this illegal, that's good. You don't have any privacy rights in Connecticut. The police can bang into your house and see if you've got condoms under your bed. That got revisited in 1965 in the Griswold v. Connecticut case, famously. And in that case, the Supreme Court ruled that for married couples, the right to privacy was such, and this was the first time that privacy was actually acknowledged by the U.S. Supreme Court, 1965, the right to privacy was such that if you were married, you could have a condom in your house and not go to jail.
Oh my God.
They still made it illegal, or they left it illegal, for unmarried people to have condoms. And so that then got revisited by the Supreme Court in 1972 in another case, where they finally concluded that even unmarried people could have condoms or possess birth control without the state intervening. And that then set up the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision, where they went through literally the first, third, fourth, fifth, and ninth amendments and said, these are the reasons why a woman has the privacy right with regard to her own body, at least until that fetus becomes viable, at which point it becomes society's concern.
Right. And so I had always understood it that way as well, that what the Supreme Court decided on was really based in the Fourth Amendment and on our right to privacy, that a woman has the right. So under it, obviously, abortion rights are now being challenged at the Supreme Court, but it seems like on a totally different basis. Are they dealing with the decision as it was rendered in 73, or are they coming at it from a different place?
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, there were multiple arguments made when the Texas case was argued. How this is going to shake out is anybody's guess. But I can tell you that, in my opinion, there are at least four actual fascists on the Supreme Court right now.
Oh, yeah.
Who have no interest in a right to privacy, as long as that right to privacy runs counter to their desire to see the United States as an authoritarian, essentially police state.
And not only, you know, are they in the Supreme Court, though I would say that those are the more important ones, but they're in states all over the country now. And, you know, I sit here in Florida, where today the legislative session concludes. And I ran down a list of some of the bills that were passed in the last 2 months here in Florida that are just astounding. You've heard about the Don't Say Gay bill. They passed a 15 week abortion law that you can't have an abortion after 15 weeks. There was one that I just saw. Oh, expands the ability for school districts to ban books, allowing a member of a district without a student in the district to object to a book.
Right.
This is in the so some old guy who lives down the street who's got no kids can object to a book that your children are reading in school, and they will they could ban it.
Well, this is part of a 40-year, actually, it goes back to 1954, the Brown v. Board of Education ruling. That was the moment when conservatives turned on public education. This is the culmination of a war on public education that really went public and national with the Reagan administration. And that, you know, the culture warrior we're probably most familiar with in this regard is Betsy DeVos.
Oh, but, yeah. Right.
But Bill Bennett, who was Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Education, who came out and said, if you want to reduce crime in America, all you have to do is abort all the black babies. He actually said that.
God, yeah,
and then he defended it. Google it. It's astonishing. The audio's out there. And this is the guy who led the crusade against public education in the 80s under Ronald Reagan. So this is what you're seeing now is they're bringing in the trolls. This is the final effort to really destroy public education in the United States. They've already largely ghettoized it by creating these so-called charter schools. Mm-hmm. And now they want to just smash it. And what you're seeing is predictable. You're seeing teachers all across the country saying, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah,
screw it.
I'm done. Early retirement here, right?
Particularly when they pass laws that say that you can sue the individual teachers. I mean, it's just not working.
And that's what they did here in Florida. Again, you know, on the don't say gay, it doesn't actually say don't say gay, but it allows a parent to sue a school district if the parent believes that a teacher has addressed a subject that is not in an age appropriate or developmentally appropriate way.
Age appropriate is not defined in that part of the law. There's another part of the law that says you can't talk about this until third grade at all. But in that part of the law, it just is totally vague.
Right.
Yes.
And you can sue the teacher personally. That's time to pack it in. So all this stuff, and I think that goes under the privacy category, used to be that, you know, parents sent their kids to school. You look at what they're learning. And if you have a problem with the curriculum, you go in and talk to the teacher. You don't sue the school district, but things are crazy and crazier here in Florida than most other places. So, Tom, in the book, you go through the history of you both corporate Big Brother and government Big Brother. And you talk about the global info wars. But then the fourth part is putting the reins on surveillance capitalism. Is there a solution to this, or is the genie out of the bottle?
No, it's yes, there is a solution to it. And it goes back to our implementing something like the European GDPR, their privacy laws that have to do with the internet, and undoing Ajit Pai's god awful decision to end net privacy, internet privacy. The internet used to be prior to Ajit Pai, internet service providers could not observe what you were saying on the internet or doing on the internet or where you went or read your emails or anything else, because the internet was regulated under Title II of the Telecommunications Act of going all the way back to the 1920s or 30s.
Wow.
And that's the part of the law that says that your phone company or your local police department or the FBI or whoever can't listen in on your phone conversations without a warrant issued by a judge, you know, per the Fifth Amendment. Mm-hmm. And what Ajit Pai, a Verizon lawyer that Donald Trump put in charge of the FCC, what he did was he ended that. So now your internet service provider, the company that's bringing the internet into your home, can literally observe everything you do and sell that information. They can look at every page you look at. They can look at how fast you scroll down that page, what pictures you might slow down for, what ads you might slow down for, what headlines grab your attention, everything you write, every email you send, every email you receive, every text, every message of instant messenger, whatever it may be. It could be the most encrypted app in the world, and they can still read what you're doing in all probability. And we're the only developed country in the world that tolerates that.
Wow.
And so number one, we should reverse that. Number two, back there's this doctrine that goes back to British common law, the 10th century, and in fact, the 11th century, the 1000s, that is sometimes referred to as the Castle Doctrine. And that in Florida, you're familiar with this, the basis.
Stand your ground. Right.
Yep. Yeah, that you know, a man's home is his castle is the old phrase from the 1300s. And an extension of that is that you're responsible for what goes on in your castle. And so if you know, if Nicole, if you were to put a big sign out in front of your house tonight that says big party tonight at midnight, come on by, you know, everybody welcome. And, you know, by 2 o'clock in the morning, you're sitting in your living room and there's somebody in the back room shooting up heroin, and there's somebody in the other bedroom raping somebody, and there's somebody in the kitchen showing child porn against the refrigerator, and the police break in. You would go to jail.
Sure.
Because it's your home and you know that these crimes are being committed in your home. And that only makes sense. Like I said, it literally goes back to the 10th century or the 11th. So in 1996, with something called Section 230, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, Congress, in their infinite wisdom, said, you know, we're going to still make it illegal if, you know, if Home Depot invites muggers and rapists in to commit their crimes inside their stores. We're going to still make it illegal for Nicole to have people do this in her home. But if Nicole sets up a home on the internet, if you create a building on the internet and invite people in and they commit crimes, even terrorism, even selling weapons, even buying and selling children, you have no liability whatsoever.
Right.
You cannot be legally touched. And, you know, so what happened was, number one, that led to an explosion of what we refer to today as social media. And number two, of course, it made Mark Zuckerberg one of the richest men in the world.
Wow. Well, and absolves them of all responsibility. So he can allow the crap that goes on Facebook to continue, because it doesn't really affect him.
You know, if you had given your home to a bunch of Floridians, Florida sent more people to January 6th than any other state.
I know.
If you had invited a bunch of people into your home to conspire to kill the vice president, the Speaker of the House, and you know, take on the police, you also, even if you didn't participate in the meetings, if you just gave your home, you could be going to jail. But not if you did it in your chat room.
Uh-huh. No,
there's
get that.
Weird about that.
There's something very weird about that. There's also something very weird about the news that broke today that Ginny Thomas, wife of Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, was at that January 6th rally. She says she left before they stormed the Capitol. Sure. But, you know, and he's going to be allowed to weigh in and be on the opinion on any case concerning January 6th that comes before him. There's, you know, it's always like, okay for thee, but not for me kind of thing. Like, wait, no.
Yeah, that's the authoritarian mindset. Mm. You know, Clarence Thomas is one of those authoritarians on the court.
Yes, he is.
And also, you know, he has no respect for the rule of law, or at least for propriety. You know, the Federal Code of Judicial Ethics would have required him and Scalia and others to have recused themselves probably hundreds of times by this point. And they never, ever do when there's clear conflicts of interest. I mean, Scalia taking Dick Cheney duck hunting 3 weeks before he hands down a decision in Scalia's case. Any other judge in America would be in jail for that.
Right. All right. So we have a lot of work to do. And right now, the climate doesn't seem great for it to turn around. Do you have any confidence? I mean, I always hate to end an interview on not an optimistic note, but we kind of feel it seems like we're kind of screwed at the moment on so many fronts. You see,
I think there's a lot
better
we can do. And I think there's a growing bipartisan consensus. I mean, this is my book is a book from a liberal, a progressive about privacy. Mm-hmm. Josh Hawley just published a book from a conservative about privacy. He spends the last half of the book talking about how, you know, liberals want to destroy America. But the first part of the book, the first couple chapters of the book, are actually really well done. And, you know, I recommend people read it. So this is, you know, you've got Ron Wyden in the Senate and Josh Hawley in the Senate on the, you know, left and the right, talking the same kind of talk. I haven't seen a strong grassroots effort to repeal Ajit Pai's destruction of net privacy. But, you know, I think that we need to get that. It's just going to take a few abuses to get widely publicized, frankly. Right now, you know, of course, Ukraine is sucking up all the news.
Oh, yeah. And I guess rightly so. But meanwhile, other stuff is going on in the background. And, you know, we need to get rid of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, or it's got to be rewritten, because so much, look, just from 1996 to now, the technology has changed so much for things that nobody envisioned happening. And we have no, it's the Wild West out here. And the regulations that are there are just don't work. So anyway, we do have our work cut out for us, and that means staying involved. It means getting more people involved. And Tom, I know you do your part every day. I get discouraged. I get really discouraged. So I enjoy listening to you because I feel more optimistic after I hear you.
Well, I am an optimist. I really think that, you know, at the end of the day, Nicole, that democracy wins. And I'm very optimistic about it.
I hope so. And I'll pass that sentiment along to Tatiana in Ukraine, who's getting ready to head out to Poland. Tom Hartman, you hear him on the radio every day. You read him, too, because this The Hidden History of Big Brother in America is the latest book. There's, what, about six or seven in the Hidden History series now?
This is the seventh. There'll be one more coming out this fall about neoliberalism and Reaganism.
Oh, great. I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Tom. It's always great to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Nicole. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on the program.
For me, too. Thank you so much. You have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
All right. And with that, we are done for another day here. All right. I've got the news I'm going to play for you. And tomorrow, there will be no more excuses for shitty buffering on the YouTubes and other video streams. Yes. And Dawn says, despair is not an option. We'll keep that in mind. All right. I'll leave you with the news. I will see you tomorrow. Not quite sure. We've got a couple of options for tomorrow. We'll just see how the day shakes out. And then, of course, why is my thing not working here? Wednesday morning, President Zelensky is going to speak to Congress. So we'll make sure to get that and get the translation of it as well. All right. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Sorry about the streaming. Have a great night, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, an American journalist named Brett Renaud was shot and killed by Russian forces in the Ukrainian town of Irpin near Kyiv on Sunday. Renaud, a documentary filmmaker, was in the region covering the refugee crisis for Time Studios. The 50-year-old journalist reportedly was shot in the head by Russian forces as the car he was riding in crossed a Ukrainian checkpoint. Another journalist, photographer Juan Arredondo, an adjunct professor at Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, was also wounded. He was taken to a hospital in Kyiv. Renaud was the first journalist to be killed in the Ukraine war while working for a U.S. news organization. You know, under the Geneva Conventions, journalists are regarded as civilians, meaning that targeted attacks against them constitute war crimes. Earlier this month, a team of journalists with Britain's Sky News came under a suspected Russian ambush, despite repeatedly identifying themselves. Correspondent Stuart Ramsey was shot and wounded, and the crew was subsequently evacuated to the UK. But then again, Putin's thugs aren't observing those Geneva Conventions, as they've been targeting civilians in their attacks. Case in point, a pregnant Ukrainian woman injured in the bombing of that maternity clinic in Mariupol last week died. We'd all seen her picture as she was photographed clutching her belly on a stretcher as she was rescued from the rubble of the clinic last Wednesday and taken to another hospital. Doctors there tried to save her and her unborn child and were unsuccessful. The Associated Press reporting that the woman's father and husband came to take her body before the medics even found out her name. But another pregnant woman caught up in the same attack on that maternity hospital in Mariupol gave birth the next day. She subsequently faced a rash of abuse from Russian internet trolls and government officials accusing her of staging the scene. Despicable. Obviously, Putin realizes things aren't going as smoothly as he had hoped in his attempt to take over Ukraine, so he's now asking China for military equipment and economic aid. It wasn't immediately known what weapons Moscow requested, but National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is traveling to Rome today to meet with his Chinese counterpart. And as Putin's forces continue faltering, Sullivan is warning that Russia could resort to using chemical weapons.
We can't predict a time or place. All we can say is that there is an escalating level of rhetoric on the Russian side trying to accuse the Ukrainians and the United States of potentially using chemical or biological weapons. And that's a tell. That's an indicator that, in fact, the Russians are getting ready to do it and try and pin the blame elsewhere. And nobody should fall for that. That is why we've gone out so decisively at the United Nations Security Council and elsewhere to rob the Russians of the capacity to pin this on anyone other than themselves. And as the president said on Friday, if in fact the Russians do use chemical weapons in Ukraine, they will pay a severe price.
Meanwhile, the new week begins with new talks. Ukrainian and Russian negotiators are meeting virtually today, but Ukraine continues pushing for direct talks between President Zelensky and Vladimir Putin. That's something Ukraine's been asking for since the war began. And breaking news Monday morning, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer sent a letter to their members saying that Ukrainian President Zelensky will address the entire Congress Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. Their note read in part, "Congress, our country, and the world are in awe of the people of Ukraine who have shown extraordinary courage, resilience, and determination in the face of Russia's unprovoked, vicious, and illegal war." Like you really needed it. Another reason to turn off Fox. The Kremlin is pushing Tucker Carlson. They sent a memo out to state-friendly media outlets telling them to use his broadcasts. A 12-page Russian document obtained by David Korn at Mother Jones advises, quote, "It is essential to use as much as possible fragments of broadcasts of the popular Fox News host Tucker Carlson, who sharply criticizes the actions of the United States and NATO, their negative role in unleashing the conflict in Ukraine, and the defiantly provocative behavior from the leadership of the Western countries and NATO towards the Russian Federation and toward Putin personally." And that's how you spell propaganda. Speaking out does matter. Following widespread outcry from both employees and the public, Disney's CEO apologized for the company's failure to speak out against Florida's anti-LGBTQ Don't Say Gay bill. So the company now says it will stop its contributions to Florida politicians pending a review to overhaul its policies on political donations. Okay, I and many other Floridians will suspend our purchase of any Disney products or visits to their parks pending a new outcome. A Texas judge issued a temporary injunction preventing the state from enforcing Republican Governor Greg Abbott's directive to compel the Department of Family and Protective Services to investigate parents of transgender youth as child abuse. The ACLU and Lambda Legal had sued on behalf of a 16-year-old girl over the investigation in Abbott's directive. Good. And really? Look who's back? NFL quarterback Tom Brady announced Sunday that he won't be retiring from football after all. He tweeted on Sunday, "These past 2 months, I've realized my place is still on the field and not in the stands." So he'll return with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for another season. In the immortal words of Emily Latella, never mind. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.